I can't even imagine. Have you heard those words and thought to yourself, neither can I? But it happened. You lived it. But most importantly, you survived it. We hear you, we see you, and we're here to talk about it. We're two moms, lifelong best friends, and we've both experienced traumatic, life-altering events involving our children.
Welcome to episode 13 of I Can't Even Imagine. I'm Victoria.
And I'm Stephanie.
The fog, it's like all over the state, and like, I think it's even further north than that. That's weird.
I don't know. I just said to you this morning that when I was outside walking the dog, I used my phone light and it looked like misty rain, even though I couldn't feel anything on my skin, but it was like blowing, like rainfall.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest
thing. That's what it looks like in all these videos on Facebook. People are sharing all kinds of videos of this weird fog where they have like a light shining on it, like exactly what you said. It kind of looks like rain, but they're saying it's not natural and like alluding to there be some being something a little more conspiracy theory about it. Just put it that way.
Like what?
I don't know. Like you know, geoengineering and
okay, well,
and us being poisoned by something else.
I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying, no matter what, somebody's going to find a conspiracy.
Of course.
About everything. So it's hard to like differentiate between real and not real. Because everything is a conspiracy.
Well, nowadays especially.
I know. Like whatever happened to like a real good conspiracy theory that you can really get on board with? Everything now is a conspiracy theory. So I'm just kind of like, yeah,
cool. If you think differently than anybody else, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Well, that too. But I'm just saying every single thing is a conspiracy. Just morning fog, maybe based off weather patterns. I don't know. But now that's a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
And that wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for me if every other little thing in the world wasn't just, everything is now a conspiracy theory. So with this one, I'm just like, yeah, cool, whatever.
Right. It just kind of, it dulls it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really have any interest anymore.
Takes the fun out of it.
Bring me something that has validity and I'll listen to you.
Right.
But like, and I'm all for a good conspiracy theory, but that's why I can't get on board with this flat earth thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm open. Teach me, show me. Not saying I believe it by any stretch of the imagination. However, like, show me something that has like real proof.
Mm-hmm.
Not just it's flat because it's flat. Like, look at YouTube. All the videos are just so ridiculous. Their mm-hmm. theories are ridiculous. You're actually making me angry. You're not. And I love a good conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to have to go with science on this one.
Mm-hmm. I have some family members, not direct in my own, but my other side family that I married into mm-hmm. that are gung-ho about the earth being flat. And we're just kind of like, uh-huh.
Well, then teach me something. Show sure. me something.
But I'm a believer, but a lot of flat earthers will say it's in the Bible. But it's so... The Bible's been interpreted so many different times.
Yeah, not only that, but their
but
technology back in biblical times when these things were written was
just
so
because they say
elementary.
You know, the ends of the earth or the corners of the earth doesn't mean that the earth looks like a piece of paper. What about all of the other planets?
Right.
We're the only one that's flat?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I would just like somebody to correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And to me, sorry, but Pluto's still a planet, okay?
Yeah. Go back old school on that one. Poor Pluto.
I know. I love those bumper stickers. Pluto's still a planet or something. They're great. So I'm like, yay. Even though, like, I obviously they've figured out that it's not somehow.
It's a dwarf planet. They just don't consider it part of the counted, like, main, I don't know.
Just because it's little doesn't mean it needs to be like shunned from the rest of the planets.
Oh, poor Pluto.
I know. It's ridiculous.
No, poor Pluto.
They're size shaming, dude.
Yes, they're size. Astronomers are size shaming. That's
I'm
great.
Surprised that they're allowed to get away with that because our culture is so like
how
trigger
dare
happy.
You.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So I'm standing up for Pluto.
Yep.
That's what I'm doing.
Me too.
So you know how when you learned how to multiply double digit numbers, triple digit numbers, whatever, mm-hmm. you when you write it on paper,
mm-hmm.
you know how to write that out.
Yeah.
Right? It's called multiplication.
Yeah.
So my 9-year-old and I were talking on the way to school a couple weeks ago. She had a big multiplication test and it was going to be like triple digits. And I was like, okay, well, let me give you a couple double digits and you tell me how you do it. She's pulling out the tens places and like doing all this crazy stuff. And I'm like, why not just go, you know, right side to left side and then cross it and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Add the zero at the bottom.
Yeah.
For the ones place. And she's like, oh, you mean standard algorithm form? And I'm like, what?
What?
It's called multiplication.
Yeah.
She's like, no, that's called standard algorithm. We do that sometimes.
So what form are they doing?
I don't know.
The much longer form that gives you the same answer for no fucking reason?
I get the principle behind why they're teaching the kids how to do this, because you can do it in your head a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
You can like see it when you're pulling tens and hundreds and things out.
Yeah, we got kids at fucking McDonald's who can't give you correct change. So I don't really think their methods are working very well.
True. Those are the kids who probably didn't pay attention in school. Right?
I mean, we worked at Wendy's, so I can't really say that.
Yeah, but I knew how to count back change.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, I don't know.
Our education system's just garbage.
I just thought I was like mind blown that it has a different name.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, when did this name come about? Because we never learned that name.
Right.
Because that was the way to do it.
Right.
It was just multiplication.
Probably from that Common Core bullshit.
Probably. And I've looked up the principles behind Common Core, because when your kids come home with homework and you don't know how to teach them because you're like, oh, I can do this, and show them how to do it on paper, they're like, what's this? I had to look up like how to do this
with Common Core. Have you ever had your kids like in tears because you were trying to show them how to get the answer, but you're not right. It's the wrong way, Mom, because you're not showing your work. I'm like, it's the same answer. That's the only way that I know how to do it, but my daughter is so freaking mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like in tears because it has to be done the way that the teacher expects it to be done. But our school is a totally different curriculum. They don't do the same stuff that public school does.
Right.
So I'm trying to tell her, like, no, I really don't think it really matters. Mm-mm. They just want the answer.
Yeah, I don't play like
that. They're a little more like old school, like the way that we learned.
Well, when my daughter, when I can't help her with her homework and I give her a way to do it that she can just easily get the answer without an issue, and I'm like, if your teacher has anything to say about this,
right,
come at me.
Yeah.
And I'll leave a note on a post-it on her homework. I don't know how to teach it the way you do. This is how I taught it to her and right. How she understands it.
Yeah.
Like, if you got a problem with it, here's my phone number.
Right.
I don't play like that. No thanks. Because right. Everybody thinks differently. And teaching it multiple ways, I get, is not an option.
Right.
Because they don't have time.
Right.
I totally respect that. But doing this other stuff where you're pulling out hundreds and pulling out tens, and I see the idea behind it and I appreciate that. But not everybody thinks that way.
Right.
Just like how we were taught. Not everybody thought that way either.
Yeah.
People were pulling tens out and stuff. I mean, I think that's how my husband thinks. He can do math in his head so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, because I'm like, okay, right side, carry
the
one.
Yeah, I have to draw it in my head.
Yeah, so there's something to be said about the way that they're teaching it.
Right.
For people who are maybe more out-of-the-box thinkers, creative thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of them.
Right.
Very logical, basic. Let's just stick to the baseline here.
Nah, I always did well in math, but never liked it. Hated it.
I didn't hate it. I didn't like timed things. It would cause so much anxiety.
The pressure.
Mm-hmm. The timed tests and stuff. I remember third grade and very, very specifically with the timed multiplication tests. I would get so stressed out that I would barely finish them. I got terrible grades.
I actually used to like those because it was like a fun little race for mm-hmm. me.
No, because I didn't know them.
I thrive under pressure.
I do too. You know I do too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Procrastination's my middle name.
Yeah.
Thrive under pressure. Ditto. Do my best work under pressure. It's fantastic. However, in a situation like that where I'm racing against other kids and I didn't really grasp the concept of what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand what multiplication really was.
So for me, I had memorized it. It was all memorization for me. That's how I aced a lot of tests, was memorization. I mean, I remember in high school, granted, my husband can vouch for this, I suck at history. If I find history fascinating, Like, I'll watch, like, historical shows and whatever, or, like, Discovery Channel stuff. But, like, I don't retain information, mm-hmm. especially now. But back then, I would have, like, I would get, like, over 100 in all my history classes for some reason, because I could memorize the study guide, look at it the day of the test, mm-hmm. take the test, literally write it, like, verbatim. Yeah. And ace these tests. And I would have kids in the class, like, I remember these specific, like, boys who were always, like, goofing off. I would help them, and they would, like, cheat off of me or whatever every once in a while. And I had, like, 104 in that class.
Nice.
But I just memorized the freaking study guides.
And you don't remember
But I don't remember
anything.
Any of the information. Like, none of it stuck. It was just, right. I needed to remember it for the test, and that was it, and then it was gone.
That's the problem with our education system, is that you're stressing these kids out to a point where they literally will study for the test.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And yeah. then it's gone. I mean, how much information did I retain from high school? Very little.
Right.
I mean, I guess overall, you know, just overall things like writing techniques and things I kept right. to go through college and stuff. But college, first 2 years of college, just a repeat of high school, just a little bit more advanced, a little top, you know, notched up one.
Right.
So whatever I didn't learn in high school, I stressed out and studied for the test in college.
Yeah.
As a second go around,
mm-hmm.
you know, I feel like I learned more in college than I did in high school for sure.
Yeah.
But I got great grades in high school. I had a great GPA.
Yeah. I think my weighted, they did like weighted and unweighted mm-hmm. GPA, I think because of honors classes mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah.
I think mine was a four. It was over a four.
Me too.
I think it was like a 4.13 or something.
I don't think mine was that bad. I think it was like a 4.08 or something. I mean, they're close.
I don't remember.
But then my unweighted was like a 3. I don't remember exactly, but I was 81st out of my graduating class of 400.
Yeah. So I don't know where I was, but
I actually found my like program thing from high school. I was going through my garage and I found
from your
like,
graduation.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and I'd always said I was 81st, and I double checked. I was 81st.
Nice.
But like my friend Michael was like third or something. Like, he was so smart.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even try.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's why he's like a doctor now.
I know. I know. He made good choices in his life. Good job, Michael.
Despite all of the partying that he did.
Oh, boy, that guy. I love that guy.
Miss you, Michael.
He's so awesome. I had to try really hard in certain areas to get good grades. I wasn't somebody that would just listen, never do my homework, and ace the tests. I had to actually, like, try.
Yeah.
But then, like, certain things, writing, that was so easy for me. I could just BS my way through anything.
Oh, I know.
And I would get great grades. It's awesome. I was like ChatGPT before ChatGPT existed.
That's why you love it so much now.
I know.
Well, I remember you helping me with some story in college. It was all about, remember we went like on a run or something, and you were like feeding me like the plot while we were running down that little side street uh-huh. next to the dorms? Us running.
I remember running because we did it like twice.
Exactly.
Because your boyfriend at the time had just gotten out of the army, and he was like our drill sergeant, and we were like dying. Like, what are we doing? We did it like twice.
Yeah. And then, that didn't really stick very well. What was it called? It was like, it was all about some, what does it mean when you like hurt somebody or kill somebody because like say somebody, you caught somebody cheating or whatever, and then you like kill the person that the person was cheating with.
Like,
what
is
that
called? Crime of passion.
Crime of passion. Yeah, mm-hmm. It had something to do with that. Oh my gosh, what was the name of it? I actually saw it. I was going through like one of my old like Rubbermaid totes from like my past. Mm-hmm. That's in my closet, which we all have one of those, I'm sure.
So I was going through to find my commencement
It was in there, and I had like saved a handful of like some of my papers from college that I was a little more like proud of. And that was one of like my creative stories. And I forget what class. Maybe it was for Tom's class.
I'm sure.
I think it was probably for Comp 1 or mm-hmm. Comp 2. I think it was for his like creative writing class or something. Yeah, that story was in there. And you helped me write it.
I'm sure.
I think you helped me write probably even more than that. But I specifically remember you feeding me the plot of this made up story while we were on that run.
That's funny. I don't remember that at all. That's really funny.
and, you know, I love true crime.
Yeah.
That was before true crime had like a name. God, I'm above before everything. I'm like a trailblazer. True crime, ChatGPT.
Yeah, it had something to do with like catching somebody cheating and then like killing the person and then like, I don't like.
That's hilarious.
Hiding.
How would have I even known about that?
I don't know.
Like 20, 18. That's hilarious. We should read that paper.
Oh, on the podcast?
Yeah.
I gotta go find it. So in today's episode, we're going down a little bit different of a pathway than we usually do. Typically, we bring on moms, but today we not only have a mom, but we have an expert in a particular field. The field that we are going to be discussing today is about frequency healing, and it's something that I know a little, very, very little about, but for the most part, it's uncharted territory. What about you?
Yeah, I know a little bit about frequency healing. Just not this particular modality of frequency healing. So it was an interesting episode to listen to for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I still have a lot of questions, but I think I definitely know more about it. But I'm interested in diving a little bit deeper. So maybe that's something that we can explore in future episodes.
Well, actually, I did reach out to Haley after we recorded to ask a few follow-up questions. When you listen back, maybe your questions will be answered. And that goes for the listener as well. So stay tuned to the end and you can hear the questions and answers that I asked Haley to follow up on. Just a quick disclaimer before we get started today. At I Can't Even Imagine, we believe in creating space for open conversations with experts from various backgrounds. However, we do not endorse or subscribe to any specific medical, non-medical, or healing modality. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guest and are meant for informational purposes only. We strongly encourage you to consult with your doctor, practitioner, or trusted health professional before making any decisions regarding your health and well-being. Everyone's journey is unique, and what works for one person may not be right for another. As always, we encourage critical thinking, research, and a professional guidance when exploring new approaches to health and healing. Now let's dive into today's conversation.
Today, we are sitting with Haley Mueller. Haley is a holistic practitioner and quantum energetist and owner of Frequency Health Codes. Haley is trained in applied kinesiology and cell behavior. Hello, Haley. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So we are kind of going into some uncharted territory with this episode, and we are super intrigued in what you do. So first, just kind of tell us a little bit about your journey into frequency healing and what inspired you to specialize in this area.
Well, my whole story is what inspired me. I have been just riddled my whole life with trauma. My inner world was just very hostile. I had a lot of bad experiences as a child. And it just kind of, as I grew up, I developed a lot of health problems. I developed a lot of them. I had some troubles with relationships. It rocked my entire world. It used to be a very hostile, very chaotic world. And it just got so bad that I just became done. So like I was, you know, going to school the regular route, the traditional route. And I realized that I needed to go a different way to get relief, if that makes sense. It was my personal motivation. Mm-hmm. Because when your health goes south, everything else goes south. So I couldn't even enjoy my quality of life anymore. I didn't have it. And so that is what started all this. So it was, you know, as a child, just being pushed around, mistreated. I had very abusive parents, and my siblings kind of took on a lot of the tendencies. And it's to the point now where I can't even speak to many of them because of just I've healed so much that I start to feel those feelings, those health problems kind of creep back in as I tried to interact with them. But anyway, I grew up and I started to venture out into the world. I went to college and I just had a passion. I started out doing music, but I realized I loved the part of music where working with people. I loved teaching people, and I started to notice as I was voice teaching, it kind of crept into noticing these people having issues with relationships and issues with themselves. And I just kind of naturally started to like trauma coach people as they were having these issues, but they were, you know, coming to me for singing techniques and, you know, performance ability, things like that.
So there was something about you that people just felt like they could be vulnerable with you. And there was like a trust factor there where they could just be open about things. Like, kind of like, it reminds me of like when you sit down with your hairdresser, you know, they're like, they're kind of like a therapist.
Or the bartender.
Yeah.
Right. Really can vent to and open up about certain experiences or things that you feel you're going through at the time. Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what it turned into. And I kind of switched gears from my college. I was going to BYU at the time. And I realized, you know what, I want to go into marriage and family. And I want to learn some techniques. But I also want to just study what is the basics of relationships, how do our brains work, how do they operate. And frequency, I feel like it's just top tier of all of that. It's learning, it's the quantum physics of how our bodies and brain work. And so that's what we'll get into.
Yeah. So how did you find out about frequencies? Where did that fall into your journey?
So I stumbled upon it. It was 2018. So that's when I was the sickest I ever was. I had some mold exposure going on and all of my world was crumbling down. I had to make a complete lifestyle change. I also had to complete relationship change. I had to look around and see what was hurting me, what was no longer serving me. And it was just a big wake up call. So I had a friend, I had Lyme and mold exposure. And I met this friend through this support group that we were in for Lyme, people that struggle with it. Just halfway through the program, as we were supporting each other, she just started naturally to be able to go outside. She had more energy to be with her kids. And I just said like, all right, what are you doing that is making you get better? Cause I was like, clearly, you know, all these people around us in the support group are, they're still sick. They're still struggling. So what are you doing different? And she's like, well, she didn't tell me how she met this guy, but he's the one that is the founder of the program I now do. And he was working virtually out of Rhode Island and he had what is called Lyme classes. And so he just had you attend once a week, you listen in and he works through each of you one-on-one. And there's like 30 people present. And he just kind of, you know, asks you some questions. What are you currently dealing with? And then he sends you codes. And I was super skeptical at first. I was like, what is this witchery woo-woo stuff?
I will say a lot of our listeners are probably going to have that same mindset too.
Of course.
Not that I would call it woo-woo because I do know frequencies are legit. They are a thing. But can you backtrack just a tiny bit and then come back to this, but explain what frequencies are to somebody who just doesn't have a clue?
So frequency is pretty much the raw communication of how our bodies respond to everything. So like when you take a drug, it's not necessarily just the components of the drug you're responding to, it's the frequency of it. So that's how our bodies respond. When people hold up crystals in their hand, I know it sounds crazy woo-woo, but that crystal has a frequency as well. So we're very much drawn to or repelled by various different frequencies in our body. And our brain is its own working frequency machine. Every cell, we have over 30 million cells in our body, and every single cell has kind of its own mind in a way and its own frequency. And the brain can match every single cell in the body and recalibrate, correct, or repair every cell in our body. And so it's just how our body responds to anything in its environment, to the water, to the air, even like, you know, how we've been dealing with hurricanes recently. I noticed that there was a certain frequency with the hurricanes and certain people were coming to me with certain health issues just from when the hurricane started. They were very curious as to why their body was handling it the way it was. We can change it. We are very capable of changing it with our thoughts, with our emotions. So we're very electrical beings. I mean, have you ever felt like a shock or felt like? Yeah. So that's your brain sending signals to different parts of your body through electrocution.
Mm-hmm. And so it can be, I mean, something as simple as saying, like, you hear the popular phrase, it's mind over matter. Or people talk a lot these days about mindset and how, like, if you tell yourself that you're sick over and over and over, you think that you're sick, you don't feel good, you're going to feel like shit.
Right.
Right.
And what if you tell your body, you know, I'm strong, I'm capable, I can heal,
you're going to get better a lot quicker.
Yeah. And it's actually interesting you mentioned that, because I actually got to see a week ago my brain respond to that in real time. So I just had this mastitis from hell. Like, it was probably one of the worst kinds. My lymph nodes swelled up really bad on my right side. I never had it that bad before, and I'd had mastitis many times. So this time it was bad enough I had to take painkillers. It was really painful. But of course I was doing codes for it. My body asked for lymph codes. So that's what I was doing. And I remember as I finished them and I turned on the music, because there is a frequency music at the end that activates your cells for the brain to see. But I laid down and it was like a lightning storm. I could see these like surges just going through, and I could see it was like lightning flashes going over my eyes. And as I started, like, it kind of got me excited for a sec. I was like, oh my gosh, good job. And I said to the brain, good job. Thank you. Thank you. And I just started like telling the brain, thank you. And I told the body, you can do this. And all of a sudden the surges like vamped up double time. So it was like the moment my body got like, so you have your brain and then you have how you speak, and your body can hear what you say, and your body can respond on a cellular level to what you say. And so, yeah, you're right. When you say I'm sick, your body's going to be like, I'm sick. I'm never going to get better. And we haven't, and I kind of call this the cassette tape or replay, but I tell people, when you get sick or life gets hard, what do you tell yourself? Do you tell yourself this is always going to be the case? Do you tell yourself my life sucks? Or what are you doing to change that replay? Because we have these neural pathways in our brain, and our thoughts are like zip, zip, zip. And this is kind of something else I call it black trees, where we have our neural pathways and they're supposed to be these bright pink, beautiful pathways. But when we have negative thoughts, they turn black, and it can actually cause brain degeneration and other health problems. And so I tell people, you can create a new neural pathway by honoring your feeling, saying, my life sucks. I'm always going to feel like this way. And you can stop and say, yeah, my life sucks, but it won't always be this way. Or there's hope. You're kind of starting to recalibrate and change how you think. So that's kind of a bit of limbic neuroplasticity that I teach people to do. But yeah, our thoughts are we're a lot more powerful than we think we are. So
you mentioned codes earlier.
Yes.
Okay. So totally clueless on that. So can you backtrack a bit again? Sorry. There's just so much to learn. So explain to us what these codes are.
So these codes they're PDFs, and they're a mix of numbers and letters that correspond to cells in your body. And there's also parts of it where they're words, and the words, and it's kind of a interesting phenomenon that I'm still trying to learn and figure out, but this is what the founder has described. So there's certain codes where there's words. Some of them, like, let's just say, for instance, the child who feels abandoned as an adult. The abandonment codes, a lot of the pages will say at the beginning, they'll say, you know, dad's betrayal, mother's rage. It's going to say things like that, because what you're doing is when you read those, and your eyes are a portal to the brain. So you read them to show the brain where in your body those cells are that are being affected by that trauma. So when your eyes look at them, the brain recognizes those words, and it knows exactly where to repair the cells that have been affected by your mom's rage or your dad's betrayal, anything, you know, depending on what the trauma is. And so there's lots of like numbers and letters that are mixed together, and those are just cells in your body. There's like D2C1, ED2C1. Some of them don't make as much sense, but there's some that, like bacteria codes, they'll say like December 1st, because some bacteria activate December 1st. So it's an interesting thing.
Who like came up with these codes? Who founded them? And like, how do you know how long ago that this information came about?
So I know that the codes have been out for probably at least 30 years now. So the founder, I can tell you a bit about his story. He had a lot of trauma. He alluded to being trafficked as a child, and I can't necessarily confirm that, but he's alluded to it when he was the one that trained me. He pretty much grew up sick, had a lot of health problems similar as, you know, many of people like me that kind of stumbled upon the program. But his whole story is that he was walking around with a cane at 30, and he just once again got fed up with sickness. That was his story. And he was very much a believer in Western medicine, but they weren't helping him. And he just said, hey, like, I really need to get better. I'm taking these drugs. I'm doing everything you told me to. And their last resort was surgery. And so what happened was he had ankylosing spondylitis. And so he was having these joint problems, and he just wasn't getting the help he needed. So he went to Mexico, and there was a doctor down there that was very familiar with both worlds, Western medicine and alternative medicine as well. And he gave him some injections to help his joints repair. And he also had some stem cell stuff done, as I remember right. But this doctor was the one that kind of started him onto this other trajectory, where he showed him all the modalities he knew. And so Advanced Cell Training, this program, is kind of a combination of many modalities. And he doesn't necessarily share exactly how he came up with the codes, but I'm guessing it's through kinesiology, which is muscle testing. Mm-hmm. And he knows what specific questions to ask to get those codes produced. So he created them 30 years ago, at least. So he started out with allergies. He would go to church, and everyone there would be coughing or sneezing or wheezing. He said he started getting information as to things to write down. And so he wrote down these numbers and letters that didn't make sense, but he would bring them to church every week, and he'd pass out these PDFs to people, and he would have them read them. They would get better. And so it's kind of a little bit of the placebo effect, but there is also these reading these codes and the body responding in a certain way. And so people started getting better. They started coming back to him saying, hey, can you create codes for this health issue or that health issue? And so it took a bit of time, but he's now developed over 14,000 different codes for different issues. He says there's only a couple select illnesses where, not that the codes won't help or heal you, but they're tough and it takes a little bit more time to work through. And so that's mainly the limitations with it, but he's created codes for pretty much every ailment that he's encountered. And he's been doing this for a long, long time. And there's lots of, there's a website, there's some videos, and there is one video where he shares his story where he's being interviewed. And so there's some good info on there as well. And there, I think there is a video that he shares how the codes work and how he came up with them. And so I can send those over to you.
So what type of traumas or illnesses do you see most commonly in the people that you work with?
So chronic illness is a big one. So any autoimmune issues, the biggest one I've worked with is Lyme and mold, because those are usually hand in hand. Lots of bacterias. So anyone that has come in contact with like Bartonella, so many ones that even like most recently there's an African pathogen that has been coming up in people's bodies. There's so many different reasons why people come down with different things, but it's kind of a work in progress. It's learning how certain people respond. So when they have a beginning of an illness, usually it's a pathogen. I found it often to be, like lupus, fibromyalgia, or MS. And then as they heal the pathogen, then their body starts to work through parasites. And so that's kind of another layer. I kind of try to explain it as we're like an onion, right? So you peel off layer one, and then there's layer two, right? So layer one is the pathogens. Layer two is the parasites. Layer three is sometimes we have trapped emotions that get stored in our liver, in our kidneys, in our heart. There's so many different layers that I've kind of encountered or worked through over the years. Yeah, it just changes with each person. But most of the time, that's kind of the trend I've seen. But it's mostly the chronic illnesses is what I work through. So anyone that has a gut problem, I've also noticed that certain people, like people with Lyme, are probably down the line going to pick abandonment codes, because for some reason, the pathway of trauma they've experienced, it leads to a certain illness.
That was actually going to be my next question.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, how was it tied into trauma? And then I was thinking, well, I know that trauma, like you were talking about trapped emotions, that can bring out different sicknesses in people. Can you elaborate that on that a little bit?
Yeah. So something I share with everyone about trauma is that the reason why the trauma alone can wreak havoc on our bodies, even if there was no illness on top of that, right? So emotions, the emotions we feel as a child. So if we grew up with a lack of love, if we were told very toxic words, things like that can really make our bodies sick. So even if our mind were like, oh, words don't hurt me, words don't affect me, our bodies are still responding to it. And so if you've ever heard of the Dr. Emoto water experiment, have you ever heard of that?
No.
You can Google it. Just Google like Dr. Emoto water experiment pictures. You'll see. So what he did, and this is something the founder of Advanced Cell Training just really like, he really dove into, because he wanted to understand why emotions are so powerful and why these people coming in were so sick when they'd never had a history of other illnesses. It was just their childhood. And so what happened is this Dr. Emoto, he studied water under a microscope. He would drop on a petri dish. He would just drop one drop. And as it dropped, he would say, "You're beautiful. I love you." He would say even like just beautiful words like God and prayer. And then he would put it on under the microscope and study what the water turned into. And it was like these beautiful snowflakes, these water formations that were just gorgeous. And then he also then would drop water and he would say, "You disgust me. I hate you. You're evil. No one's going to love you." Things like that. Things that, you know, we are typically told as a child. And so he would then slip it under and the water turned brown and it turned into this like gooey oobleck stuff. Our water is 65% in our body. So if we're being told those words, or even just we're feeling a withdrawal of affection, that can change our water and our bodies to a biotoxin. And so that water is turning brown and it's pulsing through your organs, into your bloodstream, into your tissues, and it's weakening wherever it goes. And it actually goes dormant. And so there's actually a scientific thing happening when someone gets triggered. So that biotoxin activates. So if you've ever been triggered before, wherever you feel it, sometimes you feel like a headache coming on, or sometimes you'll feel like a backache or back pain or aches in your arms. That's where that biotoxin is in your body. And so there's actually a really cool method I share. I try to share with everyone. I call it the radical forgiveness method, where I just kind of I tell them to do a letter burning of sorts. And you don't have to do it with the person or your abuser or whoever hurt you. They don't have to be present, but you do have to write a letter to them and you say out loud, you read it out loud once you've written it out, and you just say every good thing they've done for you, all the good times, and then all the bad and every single bad thing, like do it all. And then you read it out loud. And at the end you say, "I forgive you" 3 times. And on a cellular level, that neutralizes that biotoxin in your body. So I tell people, like, if you can't do the codes, that's fine. Do that letter burning process. And I've done it before, and I actually felt like I was going to throw up after I said, "I forgive you." Just so many different things that have happened to me that I've done to kind of cut that ball and chain that I felt like I had when my parents tried to pass. You know, trauma is kind of like a disease in a way. And when people try and say those things to you, or what I call an energy transfer, they pass things to you and you decide whether you want to accept it or not. And as a child, you can't really decide if you're going to accept it or not, because it's your parent that's telling you that. And so you trust them, you love them, you want to please them. And so us as children, we're very vulnerable. We don't have many boundaries set in place. And so I tell people when they first start out that if they really want to cut their codes in half or less, they can do that letter burning or radical forgiveness method to every single person that they've had a rocky relationship with. Even if that person didn't know that they hurt them, it's really powerful. And so when you say, "I forgive you," just something happens to our bodies. Someone that my mentor worked with, she dropped 30 pounds. He said that she looked like she had like she said, she looked at the scale and was at least 30 pounds over the course of like 2-3 weeks.
So she was literally carrying the weight of her trauma.
Yeah. Trauma can actually, so I actually tell people, cause people want to like lose weight. And I was like, so there is like fat and storage and stuff in the body, but there is also inflammation from parasites and pathogen. And I was overweight for a long time, but until I started doing codes for parasites and pathogen, I was trying, like, I was trying pills. I was trying, you know, all those MLM products, right? With the green tea and the, mm-hmm. there's so many different things out there. And it's like, those are helpful, but you don't want that weight to return. And so if that weakened tissue, that inflammation is still in there, you're going to pack on the weight again. And so I tell people, heal from what happened to you as a child, because that's really the foundation of how we see ourselves, our identity as a person. And so that's very much, I feel like, weight loss is tied into. And so how you see yourself, and how that's very much based off of how our parents treated us as children.
So I am familiar with frequency healing in a way when it involves a machine. I have had conversations there's actually a couple of local people here who do that as a career. And I've been able to pick their brains a little bit about it, but they do like in their home, they have these machines and, you know, you're all hooked up and the machine reads you. And there's also codes involved with that. So yes. How is that different from what you do? And are these codes the same?
So I actually work with a couple of my clients are frequency practitioners. And one of them runs an AO scanner. Another one has the Quest machine. They're kind of getting kind of both perspectives. And they said that there is some limits they found with the machine. So the machine can only produce probably a couple 100,000 different codes. And also it's just, it's a machine. You have to do it in person. With how this program is, it's very much virtual. Being in person isn't required because we are all energy. We're all connected. And so because energetically you can connect with someone across the world. And I've been treating people now in over 13 different countries. Well, they've been treating themselves. I'm not treating them, but I'm providing the codes for them. And I've been able to muscle test. Yeah. Many people in the UK, in Australia, in South Africa, just to name a few places that I've done it. And so the machines can be limited, but they can be very effective if you're in person and the person is trained with the intention to do it in person. But for me, I do it virtually and remotely. And I've also found that the brain has no limits. The brain can access every cell in the body. If you turn it from the focus to a machine to your brain doing the work, that is kind of the difference.
So what are some misconceptions about frequency healing that you'd like to address?
Not very many people know about frequency, for one thing, but I also think when people ask me, hey, is this like YouTube meditations? Meditations are powerful and they can activate the brain to do certain things, but it's the codes that actually derive like towards the actual cell in the body.
I mean, I would think that a misconception is just that it's not real. I know people right off the top of my head that would be like, you're crazy. That's woo woo. Like, I thought you were already crazy. That's even crazier.
Right. Well, the thing is, people don't understand. So we're just as a society kind of out of touch. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, if I can't see it, it's not real.
Right.
But you have feelings, right? You have emotions. Those are very real. You can feel them even as right now, right? As you speak. And so there's so many things. There's the realist, right? And then there's the idealist. And I think it's just important to understand that also how open someone is to something very much depends on how healthy they are. Mm-hmm. So someone who's more closed off and more resistant to things, and this isn't, you know, to, you know, bash or speak down on anyone. It's just, I found a lot of people that come to me and say, hey, you know, what is this crazy woo-woo stuff? And I answer their questions, but I know that this program isn't for them because of just the resistance they have. And that usually means that their body won't respond. There are blockages probably in place that might make it hard for them to respond and to heal.
When you say blockages, that reminds me of like detox pathways. If your detox pathways are clogged, you're not going to be able to detox.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's that's a bigger thing now, is that right now we're kind of in a pill popper world where people are unhealthy and they're very sick and they want to get better quickly without acknowledging what even made them sick. And they want, mm-hmm. you know, results in a way that doesn't require facing what was put there or why they're sick even. And so blockages, detox pathways is one of them, but there's also mental blockages. And I have a few clients where that's happened to, where a blockage kind of came up and the muscle test was letting me know, like, you need to ask this set of questions. I have different like questions for different scenarios that I ask. And I found out that this one gal, so I got her some pretty intense codes. Like every person I've done with those codes was like, whoa, that's an immune response. Like they needed some help or some things to help detox them or aid them through the process. And she was like, yeah, I felt nothing. And I'm like, what? And so at the end of that month, what I usually do is I say, okay, does her body need, there's specific codes to release blockages. And I got yes, that she needs to do those. And it's like a 50-50 chance if the blockage gets released. And she'd actually been through a trauma that past month. So traumas can actually put blockages, if it's a new one, can put blockages in place. Also, certain like life decisions I've noticed can just create these different scenarios to where they're going to need to do the TCS codes. And so as long as they're open and they're willing to remove them, then, you know, they're golden. They're ready to go. But there are some people that come and talk to me and I say, you know what, this probably isn't for you, which is fine. It's just, you know, you have some mental things you need to work through to even get to a point where your body will respond.
So how can our listeners know if they're a good fit for frequency healing?
So when it comes to frequency healing, if they know they're a good fit, if they feel really drawn to what we're talking about, if they feel drawn to someone, this program is very much the philosophy of your body can heal itself. And if you believe that and you feel it, like your cells will actually feel it and you'll feel good and you'll be excited. Like your emotions will just like respond to how your body's feeling. And it'll become this mix of excitement and like hope, like, wow, I can actually heal this thing and this thing that I've been struggling with my whole life. Like, that's how you know.
What should they consider when trying to find a healer?
Well, really just use your intuition. How do you feel? Get to know the person. Because I tell, and I'm training practitioners right now, I tell people, it's not necessarily the program or the modality, it's you. They're buying you and the relationship they're going to have with you. And so if they feel good about you and how you deliver yourself and how you talk about what you do, if you've developed your identity as a person and a practitioner, then that will give a clear answer to each person you come in contact with as to what are you for them? Are you the right person for them? And so there's a lot of people, like, say, for instance, I'm very much neutral on like the religion aspect. And a lot of people have looked at this program and thought, oh, is this religion based? And the founder is a Judeo-Christian and he has more of a more rigid belief when it comes to God, Jesus, and all that. I'm very much more open. And so I teach people that it's your beliefs and your reality that creates the healing. You don't have to believe in a God, but if you believe in something that created you, then that's all that you need. And that's how your body responds, because that's what you believe. And so I'm very much more open to that. And a lot of people who are very rigid Christian are very much, no, like, that's not for me. And that's fine. So I tell them, okay, well, maybe I can pass you to a practitioner that you can also vet that maybe is a little bit more on your wavelength or beliefs. So I kind of, you know, I'm very much not attached to when it comes to someone who, you know, initially wants to work with me, but then decides they want to go a different route. That's totally fine. Kind of how I base it off of. That's my process. If you feel good, then great. You know, let's do this thing. But some people are like, you know, I need to get to know you first. That's fine too. And so I know that things take time, and especially people who have had trauma that are very hesitant and have a hard time trusting people. I very much try to take, because I've been there and I felt those feelings myself. I try to take good care of everyone and validate their feelings. And that's also a big reason why I do things a little differently than the founder of the program. He's very much like you submit a form and he just looks at the form and then gives you codes. For me, I love just sitting with a person, hearing their story. Because sometimes these people open up and tell me things they never told anyone else. And so because they're doing that, and it's just, it's a very vulnerable, you know, sometimes scary thing to do. And you kind of risk, you know, receiving judgment when you do that. But I found that it's just so beautiful and embracing, you know, watching them change through the process, but showing, like, seeing how they are in the beginning and just how vulnerable and raw they feel about these experiences. It's just beautiful, the transformation, and seeing people open up and feel validated for the first time.
We can relate to that as well. I mean, just doing what we do and having, you know, these women come on who share these horrible life experiences. You kind of watch that trauma process as they're telling us that story, and to go from being like really nervous and anxiety ridden in the beginning of the interview to really like relaxing and getting things off of their chest. And I feel honored that,
for sure.
I feel totally honored that people feel like this level of trust that they can come to us and they're not going to feel judged, and, you know, we're going to love them and they can just share as openly as they want to.
Yeah.
It's a really cool position to be in, to be on this side.
Yeah. You see the release in their eyes as they talk about it. And even like throughout the process, I work with some very anxiety ridden people. And so some people will come back with various different concerns. Some people are like, I got this, I'm going to do the codes and I'll check back when I need, kind of thing. But other people are very much, you know, once a week or every couple of days, hey, there's a code that said the end is coming. Is that true? Is the end coming? And I was like, no, the code is validating what you felt at one point. So yeah, her body picked, it was like a traumatic, tremor, which Copac it was. It was like a few months ago, but anyway, it said the end is coming, and she just like kind of got very vamped up and scared. And I told her, it's all right. It's just saying that you probably at one point felt that impending doom, like the end was coming. You probably felt at one point like you weren't going to live much longer, things like that. And she was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. You know, she calmed down a bit. But I really try to take care of those, especially those people who are just very shaky sometimes and, you know, struggle to keep their emotions in check, keep the stability. And I've had to do a lot of healing on my end so I could even hold a space for them and not get so wrapped up in their experience, you know? So yes, that is.
Yeah. That's another side of it too, is like, I know people, I know a woman in particular, she's like a grief counselor. She works for my church. You know, she deals with people with all different backgrounds. She's really knowledgeable, and her background is like within like relationship counseling and marriage counseling and family counseling. And it's like, she needs somebody to counsel her. I mean, you're taking on everybody else's trauma. You're taking on everybody else's grief. What do you do with that? So what do you do with all that?
So I believe in like energy attachments, positive and negative, and you don't want those negative ones passing on to people. And I especially make sure I'm emotionally like ready and prepared. I'm constantly muscle checking myself to make sure I'm even clear to muscle test for someone. Because if something's off with me, and then I make sure I'm taken care of before I even help somebody else. But for me, I'm constantly cleansing myself. I'm saging my space. I'm saying prayers. Constantly, I'm talking to God. I'm making sure that I'm doing everything I need to stay prepared and ready to help each person. But I also, I have techniques that I do where I rub my meridian points. So if I'm talking to someone, and it doesn't happen as often as much anymore, but sometimes I will start to feel like the emotions build up in myself. And so I start just naturally doing breath work techniques. So I breathe in 4, hold, breathe out 4, and I take even a deeper breath, and as deep as I can do, because the more deeper breaths I take, the more oxygen to my brain I get. And I also rub my meridian points. So I don't know how stressed you guys with the hurricane, but prior to that, I was doing what is called cellular alignment. So I'm putting pressure on my meridian points. I'm bringing oxygen to the brain. Sometimes prior to that, if I have a lot of thoughts or feelings coming out, I tap my chest. So it's a mix between you know, the meridian point pressure and also tapping.
What is it? ED, the therapy that involves tapping. Is that related to that?
So emotional freedom technique is the EFT. And this program I especially love because you don't actually have to know exactly what the trigger or the memory is to work through it. The advanced cell training starts at the top and works down. My goal is less trauma for the person that's already been through trauma, right?
Right.
So, but with this technique, cellular alignment, so you're putting pressure and you're tapping and you're processing those emotions by releasing those feelings. So like with the hurricane, I was really nervous. I was going to lose my home, right? We were told to evacuate. And I was just like, I'm worried I'm going to lose my home. What will I do if my home gets, you know, if a tree falls down and snaps it in half? So at the time they were like, oh, it's going to be category 6 at landfall. And I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. And I just worked through it. So I tap. And once I, you know, have a couple emotions or feelings that I've, you know, built up, I do the alignment. It works. And I was able to release. I could finally return and be with my children because those emotions built up. And sometimes if I'm on a call with someone and it's very intense, I work with trafficking victims and I work with the worst of the worst in many cases when it comes to people's backgrounds and experiences. But if it gets too heavy, I say, hang on, give me a sec. And I do the technique and then I'm ready to return and I'm good. And so that's a really great way to calm down your nervous system. And it's something I recommend for anyone that, like, kind of like you guys, where you hear various different stories. And because we're energy and we're connected, you're going to feel, you may even feel some of the things they're feeling, the emotions. Mm-hmm. I've actually had, and this is kind of woo-woo crazy in a way, but I've had flashbacks where I actually kind of time jumped and I experienced almost like I had a memory, but it was their memory. And because they were talking to me about it and sharing, I kind of started to experience what they were talking about. And so I had to like really ground myself in those times to make sure that if I had a flashback like that, I was able to watch it, process it, and be able to validate them as I was going through it.
Say I am a potential client and I reach out to you and I want to work with you. Take me through the healing process for me as a mom with severe deep emotional trauma.
Right. I start asking like, okay, what are your symptoms? If you have any, and if there's not necessarily any symptoms, I say, okay, well, what traumas, did you experience? Tell me your top 3 or top 5. And sometimes you don't want to talk about them. That's fine. And that's what's great about the muscle checking is I can muscle test any questions I need to ask. If you give me consent and say, yeah, you can muscle test my body or my energy.
I'm familiar with muscle testing. My kids have had it done. I've had it done. Victoria is not, though. But can you explain what muscle testing is in layman's terms to our listeners?
So you're testing a strong part of yourself and a weak part of yourself to ask a question. So like for me, when I muscle test a certain way, it feels strong. And even in your mind, you might be able to sense that strength before you even do it. So some people, they lean forward. If it's a yes, if they ask themselves a question, some other people, like you can do this for like a supplement or a drug mm-hmm. if you need. But you-
that's what my kids have had it done for different pathogens, viruses, for different supplements as well.
Yeah. And that's as a 5-year-old, when my mom was studying herbalism, a master herbalist exposed me as a 5-year-old to muscle testing. I thought it was just the coolest thing ever. But I was holding a supplement bottle here and she would press down on my arm.
Yeah, that's what my kids have done. Yep.
And the more strength, the yes, the better it was to say, yes, this supplement is for you. But for me, I found with muscle testing is that if you you can do the swaying, you can ask yourself a question or, okay, do I need this supplement? And you'll sway forward if it's a yes. You'll sway backward if it's a no. And if you stay firmly planted and you don't sway either way, that means you need to ask a different question. Or you, maybe your body doesn't have an opinion about that thing.
And so, I never knew that muscle testing could be done virtually.
Yes, it's very, a lot of people are like, how do you do this remotely? And I'm like, I've been able to do it and I've been able to do it for multiple people just over the years. I started out small because I was like, is this really possible? How is this done? And people were responding to the muscle tests I found for them. So you're acting as proxy for the person. So they give you consent. And I've actually had some crazy experiences where someone had some really bad joint pain and I started to feel the joint pain. I was like, oh, I can feel it in your knees. And they were like, how'd you know that? And I was like, I can feel it. I can feel your knees. They're hurting. And like, I muscle tested 2 weeks ago, someone's dog. Their dog had been to the vet. So I do work with animals as well. Their dog had some severe joint issues. He also had a parasite and he was also very disoriented. He couldn't find his food bowl. And so the owner, she had given him some stuff that the vet gave them, but he wasn't responding to it. And so she said, here, can you, check him out, evaluate him and see if there's something you could do for him. And so I started muscle testing and all of a sudden just this big wave of anxiety, like this fear, this dread. And I was like, is he like anxious? She's like, he hated the vet. And she said, his eyes got really big and he was like scared. He was scared to even like go in there. And I was like, yeah, he doesn't trust the vet. He's very, and I can muscle test all around like the emotions they're feeling, maybe what their reality, their experience was. Anyway.
And so what happens for like she was saying earlier, if she's a new patient coming to you, you're on the muscle testing step. What happens after that?
Yeah. So I ask people some questions and then I muscle test all around the questions and I look for reoccurring themes because I've worked with so many people. I do see a trend with certain issues. But sometimes I come across a new issue and it's like, all right, this is uncharted territory. This is fun. But I often, most times, once I'm done looking through the questions, I muscle test for codes. And so what I do is I start, I have a guide that I look through. I have a list of questions. So I say, okay, what top symptom or issue does their body want to work with first? And this is why this program is so great, because no other program, at least that I've experienced, actually doesn't ask what the body wants, because our bodies do have a preference. And that's why muscle testing, having someone that knows how to muscle test appropriately, because there's a lot of people out there that know how, but there's very few people that actually know what questions to ask. And they need to be doing it enough to where they know what that weak feeling is and that strong feeling feels like. And so that's the important part there. But with this program, I go to the codes. I say, okay, they're having joint pain. What type of pain in the joints? Is it fascia? Is it tendon? Is it the connected tissue? I go through all these lists. That's just one example. So I go through that. And then once I narrow it down to a certain category, I say, okay, sometimes I have a list in my head of, all right, is it joint code? So they need tissue or bone. If it's scar tissue, if they had like a surgery. I also asked about traumatic events, by the way, as well. Like, did that start around the time that, you know, your headaches developed, things like that. So we get to the root of what started it. But so I get to the codes and then I just go through all the categories. Sometimes I'm working with 6,000 codes at a time. And so I start with, all right, is this an allergy? Is this an emotion? Is this a spiritual issue? Is it a parasite or pathogen issue? Or is this a radiation issue? And so I work through each category. And the body will usually direct me to what category. And what I do is I usually give a mix of codes. So there's code packs. There's maybe a given anywhere from 8 to 15 or 30 different pages in one pack, but I give a mix. So what I do is someone says, all right, in their body, I need abandonment codes. All right, is there anything else? And I get probably a good tally list of like 5 or 10 different code packs. And then I ask from each pack, how many does the body need? And so some people are working with abandonment, parasite. Sometimes they're working with EMF codes, just kind of an example to give. So I give you a mix of codes. And what you do is I give you the instructions on how to read them. So I train you on how to do your own trainings is what it's called. And so I give you the instructions and I go through one page with you to show you how to do it, to make sure you know how to do it correctly. And then I send you an email of all the codes. And then I send you a YouTube link that has the music. And so I tell you exactly how to read them. You switch on the music right afterward. And then I have a 48-hour check-in where I tell them, okay, after you checked in, how are you feeling? Have you felt a drop in your symptoms? Like sometimes they drop a little bit. Sometimes their symptoms get worse before they get better. It just kind of depends. But the main goal is you want to see a change. If it gets better or worse, you want either to happen. If nothing changes, I tell them to continue if they need to continue, but I muscle check or muscle test the entire time. Okay. Do Do they need to recalibrate? Do they need to do something else? Sometimes a new symptom comes up that's concerning. Like one of my recent clients, he just got a really bad toothache, just a really, really bad one. He was like, I need to see the dentist. I'm waiting, but can you give me some codes to kind of keep me comfortable? And his body picked antibiotic codes. So I sent those. I just sent like 5 of them for his body to do as he was doing his regular codes to kind of keep him comfortable. So that's kind of what I do. I kind of give a support through the month. So I do it based off of 3 months at a time because I want people to see a result. And so sometimes it takes sticking to it for a month or two at least to see a difference. And so, but most illnesses like Lyme can take about a year of codes to do. Other ones can be 6 months if it's like a trauma that they went through. It just kind of depends on the illness, how many codes you need to do, but it is permanent once you've done them. You don't have to redo that code pack or those pages ever again after you've done reading them. So like for me, when I did my Lyme, my first Lyme codes in 2018, I don't have to do those Lyme codes ever again.
And your Lyme is healed, correct?
It's healed. I'm symptom free. And same with the mold and same with all the parasites that I've addressed since then. And so what's really cool about that is that your brain, because you've read the codes, it remembers. Your brain is very intelligent. And it's kind of like a photographic memory. Once it remembers them, it will never forget them. And so if that strain of Lyme your body came in contact with again, it would zap it on contact. It wouldn't even let it stay in the body. Your brain is pretty much able to reprogram itself to heal the body. Just like you learn to ride a bike or play a sport, right? You kind of, let's say you get a brain injury and you have to relearn, but your body can reprogram itself for health.
So what's your like number one resource for somebody who, for example, listens to this episode and they're like, I really want to know more. How can they do their own research and kind of like deep dive?
Yeah.
Where should they start?
So I have a whole YouTube channel, but I have all the videos on my website. I talk about pretty much every aspect of this program. So I have an intro video on there that explains kind of a nutshell, just kind of a very layman's, you know, perspective as to what this program is. But then if you want to kind of spread out and dig deeper, I have other videos that talk about parasites and pathogen, how the program helps that. And radiation, things to be aware of, like your relationships, how they impact you on your health. So anyone that's just kind of wanting to poke around and experience kind of the philosophies of how I do things and what this program is about, I have just a bunch of videos that explain each one. And I share lots of different like techniques and things that you can do like in the meantime to get yourself at least on a better track so that you're, you know, doing the best you can with what you have. So
what's the name of the program?
So it's called Advanced Cell Training.
Mm-hmm. And what's the name of your YouTube channel?
It's called Frequency Health Codes. That is where I have all the videos there and I share all the techniques and different things that just different things you can do.
Yeah, we can put that in our show notes as well.
And then there's also, so some people may also want to expand past the videos I have. Sometimes they want to just do a brief call and ask more questions and that's fine as well. But there's also the founder's website, Advanced Cell Training. So if you scroll down at the bottom of the page, he's got a bunch of videos explaining how he does it. He is, you know, a bit older, so the videos are kind of older quality, but they do explain a lot of how the program works. And there are a lot of testimonials on there. So, and I do have awesome. quite a few I'm trying to get on my website. I just have to compile them and put them on there. But yeah, so
tell us real quickly, where can people find you? And what is your website and your social pages?
So you can find me at frequencyhealthcodes.com. You can shoot me an email or you can find me on Facebook at Frequency Health Codes PHA.
For our listeners, she does have her little baby girl with her. If you've heard some little coos in the background, that's just her little cutie.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Haley, for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
And I've learned quite a bit.
I did too. Thank you.
I'm so fascinated.
Yeah. I hope you guys liked it and felt encouraged by it. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, check it out. Thank you.
All right, have a wonderful day. Thank you so much for your time.
You too. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hey, Haley, thank you so much for coming back on and answering some follow-up questions that I had. After listening to the episode and editing the episode, I realized that there was quite a bit of audio that I had to cut based off of some background noise. And I appreciate you coming on just to clear some things up that we may have not been able to keep in and we need a little bit more clarity on, or I just didn't ask the question, or Stephanie didn't ask the question at the time of recording. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. So my first question is, how did the codes actually come to the founder himself? Just a little bit more background on that, please.
He figured out the right questions to ask so that he could get accurate information as to what codes are and what the numbers are. I think he did it digit by digit in the sense of knowing what questions to ask and knowing, okay, with this type of illness, what sort of codes would validate that person and train their brain? Because that's what this is. It's training your brain to see the codes, but then know how to compare that DNA information in the subconscious and then activate those cells through the music. So it's training the brain to be able to see exactly in the body where those cells are. And so because advanced cell training is a multiple modality, it's kind of a jack of all trades type modality where you're not just reading cells, you're being validated for this experience. That's why it's not just cells. You're actually reading words that are actually validating when you read them. The brain recognizes it. And that is an immune response in and of itself, that the brain, it helps calm down the nervous system when you read those. How they came to the founder, I'm guessing, is through the muscle test.
Now, one thing that I wanted to clear up too, and that I was a little bit confused on during the recording, was when you refer to Lyme, are you talking about the tick-borne illness, Lyme disease, or are you talking about something else? And then how does it correlate with mold exposure?
There's multiple different kinds, but I am talking about the tick-borne illness. Also, there is frequency-induced Lyme as well. And there are, just multiple different strains, multiple different kinds. And being tick, bitten by tick is usually the most common. Lyme often does correlate with mold exposure, not all kinds, especially if Lyme was induced. There's just different ways that lead to different things. But how I make that connection is usually if most often the reason they find out they have Lyme is because they were exposed to mold. And that is how I got mold and mold exposure and Lyme at the same time. Meaning I had Lyme, it had been brewing all that time and I didn't know I had it until the mold came on. And this can actually happen with diabetes, because diabetes is a Lyme infection in disguise, but it's just a different kind of Lyme. I've been able to help people with diabetes, but I found that mold exposure doesn't necessarily, that's not necessarily their experience. So it depends on what they come to me with and the symptoms they've come to me with, that I usually know what route it's going to go, but the codes confirm. Usually the body with, if it was a normal tick-borne bite, or it was just, they came to me with these gradual symptoms, or the mold triggered it, then I usually say, okay, usually it's Lyme. Usually their body wants to deal with the joint pain that they're getting at, first. And so there's multiple different pathogen codes that they'll do. But I do know, like, down the road, as they're done, like, finishing their Lyme codes, mold is the next one, usually, that their body usually picks. And that's how I do that, is through the muscle test.
Okay, so let's talk about the muscle test. How does it work exactly? Give us a little bit more detail about exactly how that works, especially when you're acting as a proxy. What does that really mean? And how can you ensure that the results are accurate if you're acting as the proxy for somebody else virtually?
So virtual muscle testing, how that works is because we're all energy, and I have this more info in my muscle test video on YouTube and on my website, frequencyhealthcodes.com, under how it works. There's a video there, but I'll just kind of in brief explain that we're all energy and we're all connected. And so because, someone, who has a prosthetic leg, but they can still feel their toes, things like that. Anytime you experience, sometimes you watch America's Funniest Home Videos and you watch someone get hurt or fall off a roof or get hit and you feel it, that's because we're all energy. We all feel the same things that other people do. And we're all having kind of this, you know, collective experience together. And so we're very connected. That is how I can muscle test people. I've been able to feel people's emotions. I've been able to sense also like the aches, the pains, and even like after I'm done muscle testing them and we've, you know, we're done with the phone call, I often have to cleanse myself afterward. Sometimes I have to take a bath. Sometimes I have to sage myself in order to get my body back into balance because their energy can feel heavy. So I definitely notice a difference when I start muscle testing them, the different things that I sense, the different things I feel. So that is how it works. I ask the right questions. They give me the right info. And because the system that the founder created, it is more accurate muscle testing for codes versus saying muscle testing for other random things like supplements, things like that. I have found questions to hone down and narrow down more accurately how to do supplements and other situational things such as decisions, things like that, when I muscle test clients for those. And so that is how it's just really honing down to when it comes to accuracy, when you're acting as proxy, it's knowing all the information you need to know. And I know how to get that right information. I also know what questions to ask. And it's been a process, but really, really honing down on the right questions to get an accurate muscle test. And also just knowing, like having the experience of knowing what a yes feels like versus a no. And I now have muscle tested so much that I can almost do it in my head. So like I'll be looking at codes for people and I'll be muscle testing and I won't even have to continue because I know that feels strong, that feels weak in my head. So it's just, it takes a lot of experience, a lot of time.
Are there any trainings or like a special certification that you need to become a proxy for people virtually?
There are different trainings. My training started kind of, you know, from when I was very young because my mom was studying under a master herbalist. And that master herbalist kind of took me under her wing and she showed me how to do the arm muscle test. That was my first exposure. And I did that quite often with my mom because I had a lot of health issues as a child. And at the time it was, that's really all that was that people knew about when it came to muscle testing. But as I grew up, I started learning new ways. So I've learned so many ways, but this most recent one, and I show in the video how I do it, has been the most accurate so far. And that was the founder of Vancell Training that taught me that. So when it comes to training, kinesiology, you can search and there's different trainings, but as far as accuracy, this is the one that I have been able to find that was the most accurate and being able to get the best answers. And it works very well with the questions to get a better response through it. So I'm not like specifically trained on anything. Like I didn't actually finish a course other than various different people throughout my life showed me and I practiced it enough that I was comfortable. But I never got an accurate reading, really. Like the sway test, there's a lot of different ones you can look up online. And there's a lot of ones on YouTube as well. But mainly it was just through personal experiences, meeting with different, you know, different experts. So herbalists, there was also a clinically trained shaman that showed me how she muscle tested. I also learned another way through InnerWise as well, which is another modality that I do in my practice.
And how do you obtain like informed consent when acting as a proxy for somebody?
So I ask the person usually, you know, hey, do you give me consent? And they say yes. And then I actually ask the body, does the body give me consent? And if I get a no, then full stop. I then have to go to a different list of questions that I have set up. I have a whole guide of different, you know, routes I take, different questions, things like that. I say, okay, full stop. If their body is saying no, okay, is it because, and some people are just closed off. They have what is called blockages. There's energetic and there's physical. And what I mean by blockage is that either they had enough trauma in their life that those blockages were placed there by default, or that they're just, their beliefs, everything that they have kind of put forth in their reality makes them very closed off, not wanting much outside influence to be there at that time. And so usually I just say, okay, your body's saying no. And sometimes they do really want to try and they want to try. And I say, you know, we probably should look at other modalities to see if your body is more open to one of those other ones. Cause I definitely go with what the body says.
Are there any, like, I guess, ethical guidelines or safeguards in place when acting as a proxy for somebody during muscle testing?
I let them know this is what, you know, this is what could happen. I try to inform them as best I can. I also have a disclaimer where I describe, you know, what can happen when you do codes. It can be, you know, uncomfortable, might, you know, emotions might come up. I also teach in my calls what a HERX is, or die-off symptoms, and how they have manifested to some people in the past. And it's different for everyone. So I just inform people to, you know, let them know. And I also give certain codes. There are certain binder codes, like HERX codes, that I give to anyone. I ask their body in the call if their HERXs are serious or intense. And if they are, I most often, like all the time, give the HERX codes to lessen the impact of the regular codes. So that is kind of the ethical guidelines, safeguards I put in place to protect that. And I'm constantly giving support as people are doing the codes. They message me saying, hey, these new symptoms came up. I'm always asking, okay, do they need something separate that they need to do? Do they need to take extra items to aid in this, you know, process? Like if they're detoxing, I have a whole list of things I go through. Like, okay, does their body approve of, you know, ionic foot baths? Does it approve of, you know, red light therapy, infrared saunas, celery juice, anything in their diet, you know, they can incorporate to aid in the process. So I'm very much this, you know, invested practitioner that is helping the client every step of the way. Even if a new thing comes up, even something I maybe not dealt with prior in the past, I still have kind of a setup guideline. Okay, if this type of scenario comes up, I always ask the body, okay, is it this? Is it this? Do they need new codes? Do we need to recalibrate? Because sometimes people get triggered. Like I know abandonment codes, if someone has had abandonment and they have a certain bacteria in their body, or if they've had Lyme in the past, abandonment can cause just really wreak havoc while they're purging and trying to get this, you know, yuck out of their body. And so I know to provide extra care for those people. And I have a whole now list of things I go to help them. Okay, let's see what their body needs at this time.
Can you just go back for just a minute and explain just one more time about the actual process of reading the codes and listening to the music?
So the process of reading codes and listening to the music, I have a whole video on that as well. But in just, you're reading the PDFs, you might read, say, like one HERX, and then I usually give a mix of codes. So like, for instance, you know, someone might get, you know, like, so if they're saying, okay, I want 1 month's worth of codes, and I usually ask, okay, how many days apart do they need to do their codes? It most often is 2 to 3 days. So I might send anywhere from 10 to 15 pages of the regular codes, and I teach them how to read them. You read them a certain way. And as you read them, it activates the brain frequency, and usually within, as they start reading, or sometimes during the music afterward, they will start to feel the shifts happening, the changes. You're reading them. I teach you how to read them. I also have a video showing you how to read them. Anytime you get confused throughout the month, you can refer to the video. You kind of more have to have a call with me to learn the process of learning how to read. And then you do listen to music afterward. It is a specific frequency music that you listen to. I give a downloaded file through the Google Drive or a YouTube link, depending on what the person wants.
And what role do each of the codes and the music itself play in healing somebody, whether it be from trauma or from an ailment or an illness?
So the codes, they activate the frequency in your brain. You don't even need to know what frequency it is. So for anyone who is familiar with frequencies on like YouTube, this, you don't need to know what frequency or what illness specifically you are trying to heal, unless you already had like a diagnosis from a doctor, things like that. And you don't even need to like make sense of what the codes are saying. You just need to read them out loud the way that I taught you. And that teaches your brain does the legwork. And when you listen to the music, it activates the cells in your body for the brain to see.
And this question is for the skeptics or those that are in the mind over matter camp. How would you differentiate your methods from like the placebo effect or traditional mindfulness techniques?
So yeah, there is a bit of placebo effect in the sense of that your beliefs do affect, and that just shows how powerful we are as beings. But the placebo effect is where it really much like depends on your beliefs and if you, how, you know, what are your beliefs about your body at this time? What are your beliefs about me as a practitioner? What are your, pretty much, what's your reality? And are you actively working on creating an environment in your body to where those things can now be purged? Those things that, those toxins, those pathogens, those parasites, you need to start changing pretty much the balance in your body. Because this isn't just, you know, healing from codes. This is, you know, were you put in a situation where there was a lot of toxicity around you? Are you at a toxic job? Are you married to someone who is actually profiting or benefiting from you staying sick? A lot of your relationships will change a lot. So that's why I tell people only do this if you're ready. Because your beliefs, yes, that placebo effect, it is about 40 to 50% of the healing. But it just shows that how much you believe in your healing really encourages or may hamper the codes. So I tell people, and I actually teach this, I also have a video on it, where I talk about neuroplasticity, limbic, I'm trying to remember, there's black trees, which the video that talks about that. There's also another video where I talk a lot about trauma and the Emoto toxin as well. And I think it's even in my What is ACT, where I talk about this a bit. But where how we talk about our bodies very much determines whether we heal or not.
Earlier in our original interview, you had mentioned something about blockages and how it can stop people from really being receptive to the treatment. And I was wondering if you think that mental trepidation alone could account for why the codes might not work for some people.
Yeah, mental trepidation. So I have a whole process of if the codes don't work. And I inform each person at the beginning, this isn't a guarantee. This is a 99% success rate. And where most people got results within a few days, some within a month, some within 2 months. And that's why I require the 3 months up front to ensure that they give this program a chance to see the results they want to see. But the main thing is that if it doesn't work, usually by the first month, if they have seen no changes, meaning it hasn't gotten worse or it hasn't gotten better, because we want something to get shaken or stirred up. But by the second month, if nothing has changed, there are specific blockage codes. They're not just regular block codes, where they are designed to loosen on a whole level. And I've personally done these codes to where they loosen all of the trauma, all of the blockages, like a higher level of them, if you had any specific events. So like, for instance, when I did them, I was starting to feel where my C-section, I had had multiple of them, and so where the spinal block was, I felt after I did just the first couple pages, I started to feel very sensitive in that area. And it felt like at one point, like I was getting another spinal, if that makes sense, where there was a lot of pressure. And then also, like, I got stung by a scorpion when I was 13. And ever since that instant, I had had a numb palm in my hand. But after doing these what is called TCS codes, I started to feel my hand again. And it was the weirdest thing. It was tingling for a bit. And then now my feeling is back. And so it's just blockages to a whole nother level, and it loosens everything. And it is a 50-50 chance. So some people, I do inform that this is, you know, 50-50. It depends on the person, but I am very invested and I make sure that they understand that up front.
Originally in our other interview, you had mentioned that you were able to heal yourself of obesity with the codes. I was wondering if you could kind of elaborate on what that means in terms of your health journey.
I don't think I was actually obese, but I very much was overweight or inflamed is what I call it. So I have, since my journey with having a weight issue, that not for some people, it can be, you know, like packed on weight from maybe poor food choices, maybe lack of exercise. For me, it was inflammation. It was trapped emotions, inflammation from pathogen or parasites that just really wreaked havoc on my body. And I was so swollen, because of it. So when they burrow in your tissues, that can make you swell up. That's why you hear a lot of moms saying, you know, I still feel pregnant even after I'm done having babies, things like that, because it's very, you know, they can alone cause a lot of havoc. And I actually had to do another type of block code. And after I did those, it was for emotions. Well, I shed like 15 pounds and I'm still shedding, like even still, even though I'm done with them. And that was just a few weeks ago. So I definitely know there is a component when it comes to our experiences and how they play a factor into our weight.
Were there any physical, emotional, or biochemical changes that you might have experienced that you can attribute to the codes?
Yes, there are physical, emotional, and yes, biochemical changes that I have experienced to the codes. Even like recently, a few weeks ago, I tried drinking a quote, sugar-free drink, but my body, and this, it wasn't even listed on the ingredients, but my body picked, you know, allergy chemical codes and also chemical toxin codes. So yes, there are certain codes that do attribute to if you've put something in your body recently or you've accumulated, like say, you know, like a lady I worked with who lived in an asbestos house, she had to do a couple different codes for chemicals, chemical exposure, also radiation, people that have lived like close to nuclear plants, things like that. Those are some things that, yes, I've had to, you know, I've given people codes when their body specifically asked for those.
Do you know of any like long-term studies or consistent tracking to show sustained healing outcomes for this kind of treatment? Because even just off weight loss alone, I know a lot of people would be really interested in. So I'm kind of curious to see if there's anything out there that can show it.
There's really not much when it comes to quantum medicine or quantum health. I do know that there's like some documents the CIA references where they talk about frequency, but not much when it comes to how it pertains to our bodies. But this modality that I do has been around for at least 30 years.
And how do you handle things like situations where individuals might feel like they haven't been healed despite following the entire process?
Yeah, I do tell people up front, I'm sorry if you haven't felt like you've been healed. Oftentimes it's a symptom within themselves. And usually I help them. So usually if like say, okay, you know, they tried it for 3 months and it's not helped them or they didn't get the results they wanted, I have a whole network of practitioners that I am friends with, that I work with. And we regularly, you know, pass clients back and forth if the situation warrants, to where we say, okay, maybe frequency isn't the best modality for you. Maybe it's herbs, or maybe it's Reiki, or maybe it's a different, you know, me. Like I know some people respond better to like the device of frequency versus just codes. It depends on the person. And I also have sound files in my practice. So oftentimes if reading them doesn't work, which I've had a lot of clients get passed to me, even from the founder, where they read the codes, it wasn't working. And I figured out how to convert the files into sound so that they can just listen to the codes being read by them. So some people actually got results that way versus just reading. So I usually try that. And if it doesn't work, then yeah, I usually say, okay, what other modalities? Let's look in my network. And if there's someone I trust that I could pass them to, and it's up to them, obviously, if they want to go that route. But there's so many other options. But I've only had to do that one time, just one time so far. And I've worked with hundreds of people since opening my practice about a year and a half to 2 years ago.
So are these healing codes accessible to anyone, or are they proprietary and require payment in order to use them?
These healing codes are accessible through a practitioner. So they are required for payment, you know, to use them, because it is an energy thing. So it's not just your beliefs and how you view this program. It's a reflective thing on yourself. So your willingness to invest in this program is your pretty much your reflective of your relationship with your body. Not that you have to go my route or the, you know, whatever route you feel good about. It's what you're willing to invest in yourself that actually gives your body the encouragement and the nudge to heal. So it is an energy thing. There were people, not myself, but other practitioners that were giving codes for free. And the codes actually don't work, they found. The codes don't work if there was no previous agreement with that person for any exchange. So like if it's a friend and that person was already their friend before they became a practitioner, then they can give codes to those people and they work. But I found that if no one, and I found this to be the case, but if even friends of mine where I gave them codes for some reason, because they didn't invest the upfront funds, they still didn't like do the codes, and or they didn't get the benefits that they wanted. So there is some sort of energy. It's an energetic contract connection thing. Not something I fully know or understand just yet, but I do know that I have seen other practitioners give them out for free and their business started to fail because the codes weren't working, but it's because those people didn't pay up front for them. So yes, investing is required.
If somebody wanted to become a practitioner, would they need to go to a training program, or is this something that they can kind of do a self-study on to become efficient at it?
So yes, you do have to get trained in my personal experience and also opinion to become a valuable practitioner for this program. You need to be the recipient end, because a lot of helping people through their codes is you experiencing the codes too, so that you know how to help them. Because if you don't know what that experience is or how it's supposed to go, you're not going to be able to provide value or help people. So I do have a video talking about what to do if you want to become a practitioner, things like that, because there's so many people that have joined, you know, the main program, but they were so clueless as to, okay, why do I need to look into Herxing? Why do I need to educate my client? They didn't understand any of that. And the Herxing is a big part of the beginning of when someone starts to even do codes. Knowing how to provide value and using your experience to help your clients is very crucial in this case.
And my last and final question, what is the biggest question that you get asked?
Can this work for children? Yes, it can. Can it work for pets? Yes, it can. For parents, if they have DNA that they share with that child, the parent can actually read the codes as if they were reading for themselves, but they do it for the child and the child gets the benefits. That is how I read my codes for my kids. I have 7 kids. And so every night, my husband and I, not every night, every other night we crack down. He takes like 3 of the kids and I take 4 and then we swap. And so that's how our kids do codes. If we're too overwhelmed, sometimes we'll do sound files for them. But I have also been able to help multiple dogs, a llama. I've been able to help even like a lady who had some deer coming in her backyard that clearly had a bacteria issue going on. And she didn't want that near her animals. And so what she did is I gave her the sound files. I would muscle test, okay, what codes do they need? And yeah, it was bacteria codes. And she played them, like amplified them from a Bluetooth in her backyard. And so far, it worked. Like the next, she thinks it was the same deer that kept coming because they kept chewing on some berries or something that she had. She had a berry patch. And anyway, she found that they looked like they were better. Like they were doing much better. They didn't have the stuff coming out of their eyes. They didn't have the weird behavior going on. Like they were acting strange, like there was something wrong. So anyway, bacteria codes is what their body picks. So I hope that was helpful.
Thank you so much, Haley. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me again and answer some of our questions that we had. And thank you to our listeners. We really appreciate you sticking with us on this one. And hopefully your questions got answered and there's some clarity for you if you found yourself a little bit confused in the beginning.
Thank you for listening. You can find us at www.icanteevenimagine.com, on Instagram at ICEI_podcast, or on Facebook at I Can't Even Imagine-A Podcast for Moms. Thank you. Bye.